Well, let's talk today about handling objections.
No.
Hi, Christy.
Hi, Jeff.
We're recording now.
The many hours of conversation you and I have had.
Yeah.
We've had probably half of them that haven't been recorded.
You know what we should do? We should start a podcast.
You think? Let's call it The Why and The Bye.
All right. Hey, Christy, and we're back. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. How about Haskins, huh? Our own house band, Haskins, from Southeastern Michigan.
Yeah.
They actually have new stuff coming out. So anybody listening, I want you to go to HaskinsMusic.com, and I want you to check that band out because they're really cool. And I hear their former drummer from a previous band incarnation is a really good guy. So I think you should check them out and follow them on Instagram, follow them on Facebook. They're worth it. It's funny because they are unlike most other bands that you will see out there playing in that they're all middle-aged, late 30s dads who do this because they love it. And there's a lot to be said about that. But enough about Haskins. We've got a guest today and our first repeat guest of this series and
woo-hoo!
Someone we hope to not offend so that he comes back on a regular basis. Don the Idea Guy's here. Hey, Don.
Hello. How are you?
Better now that you're here. What's going on?
You had to give me a minute. I was going to HaskinsMusic.com and checking out what it was.
So yeah, do it.
They're our house band. Gotta love it.
If their website automatically plays music when you visit it, you might have some background noise. Or you might have to pay them another royalty because you're playing music in the middle of the show. How's it going, guys?
It's going great. How about with you?
Excellent.
Yeah. Things have been good. You know, it's interesting. I love the topic that we're going to tackle today. It's all about what happens after the customer says no. And you, Don, I love this because you came up with this idea really towards the end of our last discussion and said it would be fabulous to do a podcast just on what happens after the customer says no. And it's more than just handling the objection. It's knowing the intricacies of that process. So why is this so important to you? Why is this the topic that you really wanted to come back and talk about?
Well, I think that I was just throwing as much stuff at you as possible just so I get invited back, Christy. That was part of it.
And that's okay. We love that.
And, you know, I think there's two conversations we split into there. One is what happens after a customer says no. And then the other is what happens after you lose the sale. So a lot of what we talked about before was what happens when you lose the sale. I think a lot of salespeople think that, you know, they're done and they just forget about that person and move on. And I think that's only correct to a certain point. So no's are easier than no sales. And any salesperson knows it or ought to know, they're going to hear no more than once in a conversation, let alone a sale, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
No.
That is hilarious, Jeff.
Sorry. Hey, I'm going to insert
a
laugh track.
Of that line.
Listen, I know
Man,
the editor. I know the editor, and I'm going to insert a laugh track. Don't worry.
I don't agree with what you're saying at all. No.
Laugh track. You have me. You don't need a laugh track.
So what does it mean to you? I mean, what's the first thing you think of when you hear a customer say no or a prospect say no, Don?
Yeah. When I knew that this was going to be the topic of our conversation, I kind of replay that because that was the question you guys said, you know, what does that mean when you say no? And for when you hear no, and for me, it's, we're just starting, you know, that's the first no is the start of a really good conversation. Most times you're talking to somebody who promotes himself and brands himself as the idea guy. It's not the one idea guy because you get told no to one idea and you're done.
Right.
And if you're going to be the idea guy, you better have some good ideas. And I absolutely admit to going for quantity over quality. Most of my initial meetings with prospects are because I had an idea and I wanted to sit down and talk to them about it. 90% of the time, maybe 80% of the time you sit down, they don't like that first idea I came in with. It's the conversation you have after that to figure out, hey, can I come back with another idea? Sure. Well, what should that idea include to make sure that you like it better than the idea you said no to?
Here's a masterclass note, something for anybody listening right now to pay attention to. Don doesn't sell products. Don comes in to customers and prospective customers with ideas. Those ideas may or may not involve the product that he's representing or trying to sell, but it's not about your product. People, it's not about your product. Nobody cares about your product.
Nope, no one. No one. No one cares about your product.
What are they going to do with that product? What can they do? What does this make possible, right? Like, this is the thing, and this is a concept, and I think you're so spot on with so many things, and this podcast is going to go in a lot of different directions. We'll get more bonus material, I'm sure, out of it. But you sell an idea, not a product. No is the beginning of the conversation, and there's a concept that I've talked about a lot with salespeople in general is most people will hear no, but then not stop to think about why they heard no. They just hear no, and then it's like, oh, I got to come back with something else. And they throw essentially the same thing against the same wall, just using different words, and wonder why it still doesn't stick. And listen, I've been told I overthink things. It's a blessing and a curse sometimes, right? It doesn't always help me on the golf course, but it helps me with a lot of different situations. Let's stop. Let's think about why that didn't work before we just go ahead and try a different version of it.
Well, not just that wasn't the first time you heard no. Right. So here's my issue with a lot of salespeople. They act like it's the first time they've heard no. And like they just don't know how to respond to it. So they're either completely stymied. They have no idea what to say now. They have nowhere to go because you were supposed to say yes and sign the contract and I was out of here.
Right.
And I wouldn't see you again until it was time for renewal. Or like you said, Jeff, they just keep talking. So like if I don't acknowledge the no, you didn't say it. I just keep talking. I just keep talking until you say, yes, God, please. Yes, I will sign. Just stop talking.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, actually, I've seen more people lose sales after they've won them because they won't stop talking.
Oh, they buy it back, right? Isn't that the line?
That's right. Exactly.
You sold it, then like, I bought it back.
That's right. There are many times I've gone on sales calls with other people and said, just in my head, I'm going, shut up. Just shut up. Stop talking. Stop talking right now.
Yeah.
And usually the thing that they talk past, the salesperson wants to get to the pitch. The thing they talk past is the thing that's going to be important. The key factor that they're going to need to work into a proposal to actually get them to say yes. And they talk past it because they're just waiting for their turn to pitch their crap.
Yeah, two ears, one mouth, simple math.
And you know, it comes across as cliche, right? You hear it, you hear it, you hear it. I'll go totally old school. You got me thinking about no's, you know, for the topic of the conversation. You guys are students of a sales, you're professional salespeople. You know Tom Hopkins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Old school sales guy. I think I still have a set of his coursework on cassettes. And one of his lines made me look at no's in a different way was he treated it as sonar in a submarine. So it was the ping that you heard. So the subs are underwater. You can't just look out a window and see what's going on.
Just
so they
the
send
door.
Out these. Yeah. Just open the door. Use a screen door. They send out these pings and the sound wave goes out and it hits something and it makes that ping. And that comes back to the sub and the sub knows how far away they are from the object. They can adjust course.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't run into it. And he made the analogy of that was a no. The ping was the no. So you send, hey, you know, would you like it in blue? And you just hear, no. You're like, oh, well, what color would you want it in? You take the no and you adjust course. So, you know, there's a lot of hokey stuff with the old school pieces, but they're based on some sound principles. And I never forgot that a no was like sonar. It was a guiding tone to help you adjust your course.
Yeah, don't be afraid of it. I throw something out there. I mean, that's what they say about closing sales too, is close early and often. At least you know where you stand constantly. And I mean, we've intelligently.
Well, close early and often intelligently.
Right. I'm not a big fan of just throwing it up against the wall and seeing what sticks. Right. I mean, you've got to, but there's a certain, I mean, it's like finding your way through a room in the dark, right? Or when I'm trying to get dressed in the morning before my wife wakes up, it's just like, okay, wait, oh, there's the dresser again. Okay, whatever. And I'll bang my foot on something inevitably. But the idea is that you know where you stand. And, you know, we're going to hear no, mathematically speaking or statistically speaking, we're going to hear no four or five times before we hear yes. Now, it doesn't mean that you can just throw out some garbage close or some garbage presumptive, preemptive, premature, request for a purchase just so you can get those no's out of the way, right? It's not just simple math. You can't boil it down to that, but understand where you are, see where you can probe a little bit and see what you can accomplish and get some feedback. I mean, that's the thing. No is feedback. Now, I've heard some people say some things about no, and no is also a decision. And I think that's something totally different when you think about, should I follow this prospect? Should I continue? When is it actually over with? I mean, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit later. I mean, because no is ultimately a decision sometimes, and that's your indicator to just give up and move on. But it's feedback, and we don't always get great feedback from our customers or our prospects, and this is one way to do it.
Well, I think what's interesting is that, and especially when you bring up guys like Tom Hopkins or Dale Carnegie or, gosh, even Jeffrey Gittimer, right? A lot of people will say, well, aren't those old school selling techniques? It doesn't change. Sales is really not that complicated. Sales is just life. It's a conversation and a relationship between two entities or two people. And if you are accepting an answer without understanding what's behind it, then you're always going to struggle in that discussion. Because if you're just waiting for the next opening so you can say something, then you're not listening to them anyway. So you're not in the right place to have that conversation. And, you know, I love the concept of what happens after you've actually lost the sale. Because there are times, like you just said, Jeff, when you just need to walk away, when no does mean no. But does it mean no forever?
Well, we were talking about the no's and hearing the no's and how that paralyzes some people or shuts them down, or they just keep throwing more questions at them.
Yeah.
The question they usually don't ask is why. Yep. You know, you've got a show with a very intelligent word in the title, and you know, you're the why and the buy. And when somebody says no, well, why not? That's a valid question. Mm-hmm. But I don't think a lot of salespeople ask it. And if they do ask it, I think they use it to stall for time and they're not listening to the response. You know, if it is well, why did you say no? And they said, well, we don't need the product. You know, we don't use that product here. We have no need for your service. That's a different no than, well, you know, we're happy with our current provider. That's a different response. And again, adjust your course accordingly.
Totally agree. And those are not old school sales tactics. I think there are some out there. There's certainly a lot of old school sales tactics out there, but those are closely related to old school sales principles. And I don't think the principles ever really change. And I think that's the biggest difference. And, you know, Don, I mean, exactly what you said. Let's understand why. And let's not make the assumption. Assumptions will get you in trouble almost every time. You know, but why is it that they said no? And don't answer for them. Say, you know, I'm really sorry we're not going to be able to make this happen. Why did you make that choice? Or what is it about what we're bringing to the table here that just isn't working out for you? Sometimes it's going to be the price. I love selling a more expensive product than everybody else. I love it. That's selling to me, right? Otherwise, it's just a race to the bottom for the least, you know, for the lowest cost. But if you can relate it back to justifying or not being able to justify the increase in the cost, then you know you've got an issue with your value proposition. If they just say, we don't see how what you are offering us is going to help us accomplish anything, let alone our goals, well, then that's a completely different kind of no. And then you know that that's just something you should probably walk away from. That's a definitive decision. vision, right? There's a lot of quality evaluation that you need to make when it comes to the no that you're getting. It's not just about getting a no or counting how many no's you get. It's why did they say no? What were the reasons that they were saying no? And how can I use the reasons that they gave me and the feedback that they've given me to modify my offer the next time I go in? Or to what you do, Don, how do I think about a different idea or a different way that this can help them that I haven't even thought of before? It's back right to the drawing board again, right?
Right. But the first trip in with an idea is usually something that I've done some research that I found on their website, or I read a press release about the company, or I know something about an area that they're expanding into, and that sparks an initial idea to strike up a conversation to get a dialogue going.
Sure.
I expect a no. I don't expect them to buy an idea there. What I do expect to come away with is information that I know I can build into the next idea. Mm-hmm. So every no I get, every meeting I have where somebody doesn't buy, that's additional intelligence I can take back and put into a proposal. What I see a lot of salespeople that I've worked with do, especially in the media world, is they'll go in, here are the reasons why a prospect said no, and say, or they'll listen to a customer for a bit and then say, I'm going to come back with a proposal. And then the proposal they come back with doesn't incorporate any of the things their prospect told them that they wanted or was important to them. And I think they hear the no and they're like, oh, well, nobody wants to buy it, or our price is too high, rather than, oh, this doesn't in any way resemble the thing they told me they wanted when we talked the first time. I think more prospects are baffled by the fact that, hey, that thing I asked you for isn't even in here, than any offer or price. It's, you know, is this what I asked for? Is this what I was expecting? And I think a lot of times it isn't. When you visit the second time, a technique that I've found to work for me is I may have been thinking about that customer every hour of every day since we met a week ago, but they haven't been thinking about me.
Right.
So when I sit back down with them again, I make it a point to go over the list of things we talked about last time. Hey, you said you're opening up new stores. You still on track to open those stores. You might find out at that point, oh yeah, you know what? We've tabled our plans to open new stores for the next year. So this proposal I put together to promote their new locations is worthless. Right. They don't need it at this point. Why would I go through pitching this proposal when I know at this point they don't need it? Better to say, oh, well, you're closing the stores down. You're not opening your stores on schedule. What are you going to do in the meantime? They lay out a new strategy, a new set of circumstances that I can come back in a couple of days with another proposal for.
That's a really good point, Don. You know, it's interesting. You could even get different information just simply because you're hitting them on a different day.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, they could have just been off, right? They could have had that conversation with you at 9 o'clock at night and just, you know, the coffee had long since left their system. And they weren't all, they just weren't quite there, right? So there's a lot of value in going back and reviewing those pieces.
And, you know, I point out the side that, hey, things may have changed since the last time we talked. On the other hand, if they sit there, they're nodding and going, yep, that's exactly what we said. We're opening up 5 stores within the next 3 months. Absolutely, we're doing that. Matter of fact, we added the 6th one. So it's really important that we promote the new store openings. We have a new product coming out. Yep. You told me that you're coming out with a new product. Yep. That's still on schedule. Everything's running smoothly. I just got them to say yes to all the things we agreed about
yes,
a week ago. And I got them to say yes multiple times right in a row, and they're nodding their head because I'm going down the bullet list that they're reading along with me, and they're nodding. And when I read the bullet list, they go, oh, yep, that's still true. So I've got them yesing all over my proposal before I've asked them for anything, just so we're still on the same page before I turn the page.
And there's a sneaky amount of momentum that you just built up in those handful of yeses, right? So now you've got them saying yes. You got them moving forward. Okay,
and I don't think it's manipulative, though, Jeff. I don't think it's manipulative at all.
I completely agree with you. I do not think it is manipulative, but it is definitely putting them in a mindset where you are reestablishing your rapport. You're getting full credit for the fact that you listened, took notes, remembered, and then took it a step further on your own before you came back. You moved this process along on your own before you came back to them with new ideas. And I don't believe it's manipulative at all. I believe that that is one of the ways. Now, it's a way that it is. You can be influential. I think that momentum is valuable. I think, though, that's a master sales. I guess that's a bit of a technique. I don't even think it's even meant to be a technique, though. That's why I don't want to call it that.
But to me, it's just you're getting them to go, hey, I'm just reaffirming that nothing's changed. And a lot of times you can see in their eyes, you've just reminded them of something mm-hmm. that they forgot they were talking about, or you remembered to put something on the list that they may not have thought of putting on the list, but then realized it was also important. And the reason I kind of jumped in when, hey, it's not manipulative is because you hear some of the old school sales stuff. It used to be, you guys aren't old enough for this. I don't think, did you guys ever have the hard back set of encyclopedias?
Oh yeah.
So the encyclopedia salespeople had that whole thing down. I was a kid. My mom bought the set of encyclopedias, and I remember that may have been like my first real experience with a pure salesperson. They ask you a set of questions designed to make you say yes. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's manipulative. Like, well, education is important to your child, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, and, I want my kid to grow up ignorant and stupid.
Right. That's a different line of questioning, though, because that is a setup and that's part of a script and a recipe. And this is how we're going to follow this step in the manual. And we're going to take it from page one to page two to page three. I think and as you were kind of restating that, I was thinking about how I don't think it's manipulative, but I think it is valuable to understand and to recognize when you see it. So I don't know that you want to go into a sales call like the old Encyclopedia Britannica guys to say, well, let me get them to answer yes six times and then they're just going to keep saying yes. But I think it is valuable to recognize when you've got someone consistently saying yes, right?
Yeah. And it builds up your authority as a professional.
Yes.
Because you're demonstrating to them that you paid attention. You took accurate notes. You identified the things that they told you were important. And those are the things you put into the proposal. Mm-hmm. So whenever I get to the point where somebody is looking at a price, I can go, well, that's why it's that price.
Right.
What we've agreed on is not the cheapest solution. The cheapest solution is X. X does not include all the things that you told me and agreed were important to accomplishing your goals.
Right. Totally agree. And I think, you know, what is interesting is you, in a way, use no as a weapon, right? More than just a feeler. You're expecting it, you're anticipating it, and you know what to do when you get it. When you say that you sit down and you brainstorm and you're expecting to hear no on the first call and you're already thinking about the second call, how many calls do you kind of anticipate? It may vary from customer to customer, situation to situation, but I mean, do you sit back and say, okay, on the first call, I'm going to bring this up. It's a pretty good idea, but I really just want to get some feedback. By the second call, I should have a pretty good idea of how I can help them. And then by the third call, it's probably time to kind of push this forward a little bit. I mean, how far do you take that?
It's always going to depend on the client. Mm-hmm. I've been using and honing my technique for a lot of years. So I've certainly increased my odds of getting a yes on my first meeting now than I used to before, because I can adapt and move with the prospect much more fluidly than I could early on. I used to have to go back into the laboratory and come up with some new mad scientist idea. Yeah. And now I can just kind of half bake two or three, and if they go, oh yeah more like that one, I go, okay, great, we'll jot down that kind of framed out what that next proposal is going to look like in the meeting, and then usually you can get them to agree to go forward in the next one. It depends on how well thought out their problems are. A lot of times a good salesperson helps them identify a problem. They just knew something wasn't working. They really didn't know what it was. And you want to come up with a solution that certainly positions your product or service in their eyes as the solution. But sometimes you have to admit that it might not be, and you should be willing to refer that to somebody else or say, hey, you should look into this technology so that you can get invited back the next time.
I think the longevity of the credit you get for being the person who has solutions to problems.
Right. The resource, the whole resource. Yeah.
That's it. I mean, it being that guy or that gal who's just always got great ideas. You know, I was just thinking about you. You were what? We don't do any business with you. I know. That's why I was thinking about you. You kind of hurt my feelings a little bit by not doing any business with me. But this is what I was thinking about. And I want to look, I'll buy the cup of coffee. You get the next one. I just want to talk about a couple ideas. And then I'm going to leave. You can tell me to pound sand again. That's fine. But I'm going to keep coming back because you're important enough for me to think of you. And quite frankly, it's what I like to do in my idle time. Call me weird. Call me whatever. How is that not... Gosh, how is that not attractive? How is that not at least bonus points in your, you know, in your column? And Don, I know this has happened to you, not because you've told me, but I'm willing to place this bet that you've had someone say you have been referred by people who you don't do any business with, but who respect you for the ideas that you have. And maybe you're just not a good fit for their company or what they're trying to do, but they know some people who are.
Yeah, I mean, it's thankfully you connect with people on a creative level because everybody wants to be creative.
Yeah.
So when you start sharing your ideas, they will share ideas back. And, you know, it's not to judge. It's how can you adapt it and apply? Oh, man, that is good. What if we built onto it with this? And you can almost work backwards to get that referral. One of the things that I like to do, you know, LinkedIn is such a valuable tool to find the connections other people have.
Yeah.
So if I'm working with somebody in the food industry and I have an idea that I think would be great for hotels, I can see if my food industry guy that I've got a connection with is connected to a hotel guy. So when I'm talking to them next time about ideas for their food processing group, I can go, man, you know, I had this other idea poking at my brain for hotels. Do you know anybody in that world? And a lot of times they'll come up with that person that I already researched or somebody new I had not thought of, because now they've got a value. They're paying me back for some of the sure. ideas I gave them that they didn't buy. They get to make the connection and call up, hey, Jeff, you got to talk to this guy. He's got a cool idea to tell you.
Yeah. So speaking of adapting and applying, tell us about salestoys.com.
So Sales Toys is a project I've dusted off. It's kind of been out there. The site's been live for probably too long. And I just redid the whole thing. Sales Toys dates back to when I was actively selling imprinted promotional products. So, you know, those things you can get your logo on. And one of the things I'd like to do when I was selling those was come up with different ideas on how you could use the product rather than going, hey, your company buys pens. We sell cheap pens. They're 50 cents cheaper than the guy you're buying them from now.
Right.
Instead, I could go into a sales training company and say, you know, all the sales guys that you're graduating want to have contracts signed. Shouldn't they have a really cool pen to have their new contract signed because you're sending them out to do closes? Shouldn't that pen look awesome? And I could give you ideas on how to sell things that fit your product, your service, or your goal, what you're trying to help with people. So Sales Toys started out as a way for me to spotlight imprinted promotional products and give ideas behind their use, different ways to use a coffee mug, different ways, or 10,000 items you didn't even know you could print your logo on. What it grew into was the fact that I love sales stuff. Like, I am a student of sales. I love finding cool stuff that help sales be more fun, frankly. So I started putting those on a blog, and I got really good response from the random app or the new book or the new online sales training platform or some speaker I saw. I would just share different things, different forms. With the advent of the online platforms and the apps so everybody can do stuff from their phone, there's so many more cool sales toys for people to play with. I decided to revamp the site around kind of doing reviews and sharing links to those products and giving them my own unique sales toys twist. It's got to be
fun. You've got an interesting game that I wanted to hear you describe to our audience on the site.
Right. So the stuff on sales toys is not always about me selling something. Sometimes it's just fun and goofy. So the fact that we're talking about objections and hearing no's makes this especially appropriate. There's an article on the website about a game I found that I really like called Corridor, spelled Q-U-O-R-I-D-O-R. And it's a fun game. I found it online. I bought it. I had a lot of fun playing this game. It is a cross between Othello, Connect Four, and chess. You try and get your little pawn across to the other side of the board. The other player you're playing against is trying to get his pawn to your side of the board. And you both have these things called fences that you can use to block the player from making forward progress across the board. So when I look at that, all of a sudden it hit me that this is the perfect metaphor for making a sale. You're trying to get across the board to close the sale, and your prospect keeps throwing up objections, those little fences that act as barricades to getting you from crossing the board and closing the sale. Well, in the game, you can go around the barricade. You can't jump over them. And just like when you hear no, you have to go around that no. Or you have to overcome the no, which is still another path to the sale. So I basically just drew this metaphor to sales in that game, and I turned it into a sales meeting game where any sales manager should bring this game into their weekly meeting and pit salesperson against salesperson. And when they put down a fence, they have to name an objection. And if the person they're playing against has a good response to that objection, they ought to be able to leap over it and take an extra turn because they had an answer to the no. I just think it'd be a fun exercise for overcoming objections. We've all been in the sales meeting where none of the salespeople want to role play.
Oh, geez.
Nobody wants the other people on their sales team to be critical of their technique or what they're saying, right?
Well, not to mention role playing just sucks the air out of the room anyway, right?
It does.
It's heavy. When you get people who actually want to participate but are afraid to participate, it's still, it's a heavy thing. They see, even when they see the value of it, right? Because you're like, oh, in front of these people, like, I got to wake up the next day and still go to work. Like, why do we have to do this, right? And then you say, well, fine, we'll just do it on a Friday afternoon. Like, anybody wants to do sales training on a Friday afternoon, right? That was my favorite. You go and we'd have sales training at this golf course or something where there'd be a conference room, and you look outside, it's like 72 degrees, not a cloud in the sky, and nobody on the course. You're like, sales training, huh? Thanks, boss. Like, really? But the idea of making it fun, making sales training fun, overcoming objections, literally leaping over these fences or removing them altogether, or you're going to waste time and moves and energy going around them. And if you keep going around them, you're going to find that you have a very inefficient sales process. But if you can easily overcome or learn how to overcome, I used to run away from the cops constantly. And the faster I could jump over fences, the more likely it was I wasn't going to get. Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't me.
That was your first sales experience, right? Talking your way out of something.
Yeah. Prison, I think. I remember reading that article and just kind of nodding my head and smiling because it just makes so much sense.
I've been in the meeting where they want to do the sales manager wants to do the role play. Nobody wants to do it. Mm-hmm. You finally force two people to volunteer, and then the rest of the team just sits around and snickers at them, and and then they fumble because they're not used to doing that in front of an audience, and it's manufactured. It's not a real scenario. You have no background information on what the sales conversation is. So the people who are participating are flubbing it poorly. And then you end up with this, well, I wouldn't do that in the real sales call. And I think if you convert it into this game format, whether it's this, where you adapt it to this one or some other one, I think two things happen immediately. One, if every time you put a fence down, you have to state an objection, and my rule is you can't repeat the objection,
right?
You're quickly going to find out there's not that many objections. I think it's a given that salespeople in general think there are way more objections than there really are. What's the approved estimate now? 10? What do you think?
It depends on how granular you want to get, and it depends on the product that you're selling. Okay, and in many cases, and now that everything becomes so specialized, The amount of objections you're going to get is going to be determined by how focused your prospecting is. So if you're in an industry or a company that really knows what their target market is, then it's going to be very few objections. I think it's going to be way less than 10. If you're selling something that's a little bit on a broader scale, I think there's more people involved and more potential objections.
Like you said, though, it depends how granular you want to get, because there are a lot of price-based objections that aren't your price is too high.
Right.
You know, it's not in the budget. It's not in this budget. We spent our budget. Those are all money things.
Sure.
I do a thing when I speak on sales. I'll have people in the audience stand up, and I'll say, I bet you I can make everybody in this audience sit down in 5 moves. And I've had them write down their top objection on a card. Mm-hmm. I go, so when I name the objection that's on your card, you have to sit down. Mm-hmm. And I will play around with, I've got a competitor. I don't need the product. I don't think that it's a good fit. And I'll let like one or two, three people sit down. And as soon as I go, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. I can get half the room to sit down.
Yes.
But nobody has a good answer to the price objection.
No, they don't.
Not a good one. And if they have a good one, they have a good one. And you need 5 or 6 good ones.
Well, the price objection is your fault. If you're the sales guy, the price objection is your fault.
Well, it can't be two-dimensional, right? So, I mean, it can't just be your price is too high. You have to have had a deeper conversation mm-hmm. before you got to that point for it to really have any significant value for the client. So I think it's sometimes... Go ahead.
Or if you didn't, Christy, if you haven't had that deeper conversation and that's their go-to, because if they go to that objection, you'll go away and they can just go, it's too expensive.
Yeah. Or I just don't have the budget for it.
If you don't have a response for it, then you're going to go away versus it's too expensive. Oh, compared to what? Well, either they'll say compared to the thing we have now, or I have a bid from another company, which gives you more intel than you had before. Mm-hmm. No's can really be valuable. And I think people underestimate the value of a no.
I agree. So I know we've kind of come full circle here, but I'd love to leave our listeners with a couple of nuggets. So if you had to list 3 techniques in dealing with objections, and I'll let you decide what objections mean, what would be your top 3?
Well, the first one, and I hope they've heard it before, and that's don't take it personally. They take it as this personal offense, and they either get mad at the prospect because they told them no, those jerks, or they take it as a sign of some flaw in their product that may not be there. They're not using your product. They can't complain about it. They don't know anything about it. So to take it as, oh, nobody's going to buy it, nobody values it this way, or they believe that it's too high without any context at all, that their price might be too high without any context. So don't take it personally. It's really not about you, other than they probably want you to go away, right? So you didn't make yourself a welcome member of that conversation. But it's usually a sign that your rapport was weak if they really just want you out of the room. Mm-hmm. But don't take it personally. Don't take it personally. The other is, no is not forever. No isn't, I filed a restraining order against you and never show your face in this town again. It's not the old West. Like, if you show up again, we're having a showdown.
This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
Right? Man, it's just, don't take it personally. Don't think it's forever. The no is short for not now.
I like that. That's perfect.
So we typically end our interviews by asking our guest what their why is, but I'm not going to ask that today because you've already told us. And if anybody wants to know, they should go back and listen to the first episode, which was also really good and totally worth it, and find out. But I want to suggest to everybody in the audience something we've already talked about just a few minutes ago. And when you hear no, think about why. And when you hear no, think about why it was a no. Think about why it could be a yes. Think about why you didn't do what you needed to do in that time and what you can do differently or better the next time to get a little bit more rapport, to use that new information that this no provided you with to take the next step and use no as a weapon like our friend Don the Idea Guy did.
Excellent. Nope. Thank you so much, Don. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate coming back. Am I the first repeat guest?
You are.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Let's do a threefer. Yes. Let's do a threefer. Let's do another one.
Absolutely. What's our next topic?
Yeah. You just let us know. You see what I did there? Let us know, Don.
Right? I'll come back to you with a few ideas.
I love it. Yes, that's awesome.
I dig it. So if you like this episode with Don the Idea Guy, go back and listen to the other one. I believe it was episode 6 or 7, but his name will show up in your feed. He's really, really
all
good.
About creativity.
And check out some of Don's other projects. You've got salestoys.com. BigYellowSticky.com is a must read. Check it out. It's a simple message on a daily basis that is going to make you think and hopefully make you think differently. And Don had a podcast called Running Through My Mind that was a limited run of 50 episodes that in 2016. Don, you were talking about starting a couple others.
Yeah.
How have those projects come along?
I've decided I'm bringing Running Through My Mind back. I just really miss it. So I'm going to bring that back, I think, in April. And I'm lining up people for my interview show, which will be, I'm still playing around with the name, but basically it's going to be cool projects and cool people.
Awesome.
That'll I be like the conversation. It. Yeah. Awesome.
I will send you guys links to put in the show. I really appreciate you talking about Big Yellow Sticky. It's one of my favorite projects, and I tend to talk about a lot of sales things on Big Yellow Sticky. So there's one that talks about a day in the life of a salesperson. And basically, it's just no's all over the sticky note with one yes matched in. But then when I searched for that one, because I want to send you the link, I ran across one I put together that was called The Creativity Close, a haiku, because I write poetry as well. So here's my creativity close, my haiku. Staring at a no, I share a great idea. No turns into yes.
Perfect.
Very well done.
Perfect. I love it.
And our multi-talented Don the Idea Guy, we were definitely coming back. I think you'll be more than a threefer for us. We're gonna have you back over and over and over again.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Christy, this has been awesome. I love having Don on. I know we're gonna have him on again. If you're listening out there, give us a review. This is episode bigger than 15, not quite 20 yet. And we're doing this because we love it. And we know that you love it too, because most of the people from the data that we're getting are listening to more than one episode at a time. Please go tell your friends. Please go to iTunes. Please go to wherever you are downloading this podcast. Leave us a review. Say something nice about us. Help spread the word, because we're having a blast. And I think that we're doing this a little bit differently, Christy, than a lot of other podcasts are produced.
We're just doing it the only way we know how. Hopefully it's good for everyone, right?
And if it's not, then, well, we don't care.
Then it'll just be for us. That works too.
So Christy, we say it every week. When you know your whys, your hows and your whats get much better. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Why and the Buy podcast. If you liked us, subscribe. We can be found on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and really anywhere else you can get a podcast. And if you really liked us, then give us a 5-star review. We like those, and we like you too. Here at the Why and the Buy podcast, we've got our own house band. Christy and I think they're absolutely perfect for what we're trying to do with this podcast, and we hope you think so too. If you like them as much as we do, then you should check them out. They're called Haskins, and they're based in southeastern Michigan. You can find their music and more at HaskinsMusic.com. Go check them out.